You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Hey, this is Joe, just popping in real quick before the episode starts to say that this was originally a Patreon exclusive. We've also put up the first two episodes of Flux available publicly for you to listen to, and now we're putting up the last episode of Flux, which has Christine Cherry and Hallie Larson as guests. If you want to listen to the episodes in between those, you'll have to go to Patreon, patreon.com/watchathon, and it's only $3 and you get all our bonus episodes. We covered all the new Who. We didn't cover the New Year's special, the time loop thing. As a little bonus, so that this has some new content, I'm going to give my thoughts on that episode right now. It's fine.
It was fine.
I liked that...
I've been here this whole time.
I liked that we made it canon that Yaz has a crush on the Doctor. I don't like that Dan outed her to the Doctor. That's basically my whole thing.
Also, they didn't kiss.
They didn't kiss, and that's a shame. But yeah, it's fine. And the woman that's in it, Ailing B, is amazing. She's great. And I could be mispronouncing her name. Who knows? But yeah, this is the final episode of Flux. I hope you enjoy it. We'll be back next time with Battlefield, the first serial of the last season of classic Doctor Who. We'll have special guests Ashley Rayburn and Nathan Laws joining us for that. But now we're going to put in a quick little ad, and then we'll be back with the final episode of Flux. Bye. Tony's waving.
Everyone these days could use a little support, and your friends at the ESO Network are no different. With the ESO Network Patreon, the cool thing is when you help support us, it's you who will benefit. With four tiers starting for as little as 25 cents a week, you can listen to some of your favorite network podcasts early, hear exclusive content, maybe get some ESO swag, or even possibly take a shot at the geek seat. All you need to do is sign up at patreon.com/ESO Network.
Hi, I'm Joe Heath.
I'm Tony Heath.
And this is the Watchathon Arassalon New Who Review.
God, I forgot that you were going to do that.
Today we're going to be talking about the sixth episode of, I think, the 13th season of Doctor Who. Flux, the final chapter, The Vanquishers, which aired today, December 5th, 2021.
Joe Fax!
I almost said 1985. I don't know why.
You doing okay?
No.
I mean, we were just talking about GLOW.
That's probably it.
Joe's heart lives in 1985.
We were just talking about GLOW with... our guests today. We have guests for our bonus episode. We have Christine Cherry. You all know her.
Hello, hello, hello.
And her first proper episode, she was technically in a couple of episodes in a less official capacity. It's Hallie Larson. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi. You may remember me as one of the many voices on the promotional Doctor Who song that we made, or as someone in the room with Christine while she was on the phone with y'all.
Yes, and the Sixth Doctor wrap-up, was that what it was?
Yeah, it was the Sixth Doctor wrap-up.
Yeah, you are solely a Sixth Doctor guest so far.
It's fair.
But like a guest one step removed.
That's how I like it.
I feel weird doing this on like a bonus episode, not on an episode proper, but this is your first official appearance, so I have to know, how much Doctor Who you done?
Oh, how much Doctor Who have I done? I started watching Doctor Who, like, with New Who, pretty much from episode one. A friend of mine in grad school was super into it, and, like, we would watch the episodes together or hand them off. And I've been watching Doctor Who off and on since the beginning of that, whenever I could get my hands on episodes, which became earlier, or became easier, like, as streaming actually became a thing that existed, but, like, definitely took me through video store eras. And, like, before then, I'd seen the Douglas Adams episodes of Old Who, and that's about it. Then, like, Christine took me on, like, a little tour of Doctor Who episodes when we first started hanging out.
Nice. So, have you dipped into any spinoff media or no?
I watched, like, a couple seasons of Torchwood and sort of fell off on the third. I think that's it of spinoff media that I've gotten my hooks into.
I think you'd like Class.
Yeah?
Class is solid.
I know nothing about it.
Class is a show that could have had a really good season two.
Yeah.
And so it's sad that it didn't.
It has the same problem that Chris Chibnall has of splitting up, like, but plot stuff and character stuff.
It's good at both, so...
Yeah.
It can be forgiven.
You know how Chris Chibnall splits it up but is bad at both? Like, imagine if you split it up, but you're pretty decent at both.
That sounds good. What's the premise?
Doctor Who shit, but with a class at Coal Hill, right?
What if Doctor Who was Buffy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, got it.
Peter Capaldi's in the first episode?
Guess who he plays?
Frobisher.
Some dude in Pompeii.
I mean, we don't know for a fact that he's not playing Frobisher.
That's a good point. It'd be weird, considering that character is dead. Oh, wait, you're talking about the Penguin Frobisher.
Yeah.
I was talking about the Frobisher that he actually played.
No, I forgot that character was called Frobisher, and so I was 100% talking about the Penguin.
For those who don't know, Peter Capaldi played a character named Frobisher in Torchwood.
Named after the Penguin from Batman.
Yes, from Batman. Oswald Cobblepot, yeah.
No, Frobisher is a character from originally Doctor Who comics.
The Sixth Doctor specifically, right?
Sixth Doctor comics was a companion who was a shape-shifting penguin.
I want to be a shape-shifting penguin.
Was he a penguin? Or was he just a shapeshifter who looked like a penguin a lot?
That's the sort of question that's kind of philosophical more than anything.
I mean, I think that's a question you'd have to ask Frobisher.
Right. Exactly. Did anyone ask Frobisher?
I mean, I think so.
What did he say?
He's a penguin.
All right.
There's also a couple of Big Finish audios with Frobisher that were both written by Robert Shearman, which means they're, like, good.
I love how eager we are to talk about this episode of Flux.
Yeah. I was just thinking that.
Would you like to hear my opinion about this episode of Flux?
Yeah, go for it. But go for it. Go, go, go.
I think it's...
Final thoughts.
Final thoughts.
I think it's fun if you don't try to think about it any amount.
Yeah, exactly. Let's talk about it.
Now let's think about it in depth.
Should I do, like, a quick summary like I do?
Yeah, go ahead. Do a summary.
If you can, I'd love to hear it.
The Doctor splits into three for some reason and then solves the day.
She splits into three because it's the only way you can even come close to wrapping up all the bullshit that's going on.
All of the plot lines mostly get tied up in not necessarily satisfactory ways. Just kind of, hey, it's done.
Everything is technically over.
There is an awful lot of people just saying what's happening. Like, everything that's happening is fairly basic, but the way that they talk about it makes it feel like it's more complicated than it actually is.
Right.
I feel like that happens a lot. The Santarin's master plan is to do the ultimate betrayal.
The ultimate betrayal.
Because we find out Flux is antimatter injected into this universe, so the Santarin's plan to counter that is to just put the Cybermen and the Daleks in the way and destroy them and then be cheered for saving the universe but also vanquishing the Cybermen and the Daleks.
Which seems to work.
Here's my question about that. Question number one. That was supposed to destroy the universe, mm-hmm. that antimatter.
Are Daleks and Cybermen not part of the universe?
That's what I'm saying is, but, like, the plan to defeat it is to just let it do what it was supposed to do.
Yeah.
Like, somehow the armies are enough matter to slow down the antimatter that's supposed to destroy the whole universe.
Not just that. I think it's that and the Lupari ships that generate matter.
But they're part...
or some shit.
Do they generate matter?
Apparently they do.
There was a line of dialogue about it.
There was. It doesn't.
There was about Lupari shields that generate matter.
Yeah, for some reason Lupari shields are good against flux. They have +5 against flux.
Because they generate matter. Which, okay, let us remember that... I'm sorry, I'm going to be an asshole.
Go ahead.
As I understand it, when matter and antimatter touch, they do annihilate each other, but they also release energy. They don't just, right. like, yeah. go away. Isn't that, like, the entire how warp drives work?
I mean, yeah. No, there should be massive, massive explosions.
I'm sorry for being science-y.
I thought you said massive asshole explosions, and that's something else entirely.
The fact that, like... the flux was kind of revealed to be antimatter. I feel like they treated it as a revelation that it was antimatter, but like that was the most obvious boring thing it could be. Like that's the thing that you say when you don't want to have a reveal. And that's like Chris Chibnall in a nutshell. It's like, guess what? It was the most boring thing that it could be.
I mean, he should have made it black light.
That's what the episode is. It's just like, congratulations. It's the most boring thing that it could be. Even Belle and Vender being the Doctor's parents is less boring than nothing.
Yeah, because that's what it turned out to be. It's nothing.
They're just there.
They're just a couple with a baby on the way. The end.
I'm holding out for a hero.
And that's the whole thing in a nutshell. It's kind of one big wet fart.
There's also like...
the way they treat that baby creeps me out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yes.
It's weird. It seems like they're making the baby do a lot of work.
Right?
It's not even a full baby.
You gotta start that child labor young.
I kind of feel like somebody said to them, like, early on, having someone talk to a baby in their stomach might have some political connotations and ramifications you don't want to deal with. And then in this episode, you have, like, we're having a baby if the universe wills it. And I feel like that was trying to put a band-aid on the wrong cut. I don't know.
Well, it was more like, we're having a baby as long as the universe doesn't go away.
That makes sense to more now.
No, it was much more like, if we save the day, we're going to have a baby. That kind of way.
That makes sense.
But I do feel like they're already putting like too much labor on this baby.
I mean, that's entirely true. So to speak.
This child is going to be the child that, like, this is, like, total first daughter syndrome already. Yeah. And it's not even born yet.
It's child labor before labor, right?
Yeah.
That's the Santarin's plan, is to just defeat the flux by putting a bunch of shit in its way, specifically the Daleks and the Cybermen.
I'm still trying to wrap my head around the fact that apparently there's something that just generates matter.
Yeah, I don't know what that's about.
Okay. Okay.
But the doctor's plan...
You can't do that.
It's one of the biggest rules.
You can if you have energy. If they have a warp drive, they can use replicators. If they have enough energy to generate matter, they can.
Sure. So, but the doctor's plan, she's like, it's more complicated than that.
But it's the exact same!
It's the exact same. What if we also threw the fucking Santarins in front of it and then put it in a box? I do kind of like using the prisoner, or whatever it's called, the passenger. I do kind of like using the passenger to suck up the flux, though I hate the line, hoover it up, or whatever the fuck she says, ADR.
It's a terrible line.
Hoover it up, passenger.
It's a terrible, terrible line.
That line is the ultimate betrayal.
This episode's the ultimate betrayal.
A Santarin says, this will be the ultimate betrayal, and he's so excited about it. The episode really thinks... that's a cool concept, that it's the ultimate betrayal, just like the ultimate science.
And then there's the bit where the Daleks and the Cybermen just sit there and let the flux take them, and one of the Daleks goes, this is the ultimate betrayal.
I am so betrayed right now.
You wouldn't believe how betrayed I am. I would say it's level ultimate
betrayal, level ultimate. The betrayal sensors are off the charts.
Wait, keep explaining the plot to me.
I mean, that's it, basically.
But what
am I missing?
Time is a guy.
Time is a dude, time is a shape-shifting penguin.
because I don't understand, because they're like, we're gonna...
When you say he's a guy, when he was a guy, he looked just like Swarm.
And then he turned into the Doctor.
So it just turns into a form you can communicate with. mirror almost.
But that we're gonna here's the Doctor as a sacrifice, and that's kind of the conflict.
Yeah.
And then the resolve of that is he's like, you can go. I fixed everything, actually.
What does Time want?
No one knows. No characters have motivations. The highest motivation that anyone has in this episode is the Santarans' urge to have the ultimate betrayal.
And chocolate.
Right, because you don't even have, like, Belle and Vender trying to find each other anymore.
To be fair, the Santarans probably get the best writing in this whole episode.
For some reason, Chris Chibnall, for all of his faults, is really good at writing the Santarans? I don't know why.
He's gotta have something.
Whenever Chris Chibnall is writing the Santarans, he kinda comes alive. I don't know what that means.
I really want Chris Chibnall to write, like, a drama about a bunch of Santarans just living, like, in the West Country. Just like getting jobs.
Also, speaking of Santarans, is this the first episode of Doctor Who that had Dan Starkey as a Santaran and Kate Stewart in it?
Maybe.
Because that's kind of funny. They're both kind of fugitives from, like, the last era that have somehow survived, but, like, actually have never met before.
I feel like they may have met. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know if they ever did.
I feel like they've probably been in the same episode, maybe, but I don't know if they've met.
I don't know if they've been in the same episode.
I have to, like, research that.
I don't think they have.
And I'm not going to.
No.
There's a thing that kept happening during the episode, which has been happening all season, which is, like, they bring in a return, like, have a character return, and I would be like, wait, who is this? It happened, like, three times for me with Diane. Oh, shit. I'm already blanking. The woman with the angel in her head. That was the worst one. Like, they arrived there, and everybody's like, oh, we're so glad to be reunited with you. And I had to be like, hold on. There's, like, seven things happening in this episode. Who the fuck is this person? Am I supposed to care about this character? And I feel like they wrap up all these characters, but not in a way that I...
But they never
about.
Got around to introducing them?
Yeah. Right.
There was at no point was there the scene in which we learned to care about them. Or did they make choices?
What about Jericho? You didn't cry when Jericho sacrificed himself?
No.
And no.
Basically
no,
quoted Peter Pan for some reason.
His self-sacrifice took so goddamn long?
Yeah, I didn't understand why it got the weight that it got, to be honest.
Because he's an old white man.
There are so many scenes of people just saying their name and then doing something. Like, I am Vender. I took out your communications. I'm Jericho and I'm cool. Bye. There's a lot of that. It's bad. It's bad writing.
It's very bad writing. It's hard to talk about this, honestly, now. Because, like the episode itself, I have so many ideas about it and absolutely no way to organize them at all. It's hard to, how do you talk about a piece of television that is this jumbled?
Right? I feel like it was worse this episode. Like, the editing was like, I think they're trying to show the Doctor as sort of
disoriented. I mean, it's, I do think it is like, it's flux, so everything's all jumbled up. But, yeah.
It just makes it more confusing than it needs to be.
They are being, like, specifically disorienting with, you know, showing the Doctor being split between these three places. But yeah. That's what, like, when that was happening, I was like, this is what it has felt like to watch this season.
Right?
To just constantly be thrown into another place and another place and another, and another thing. And it also did this weird thing with the stakes. You have, like, the one Doctor who's being, like, tortured to death. And then you, like, jump to another one and you're like, well, now, hang on. That was dire. And now we've moved to a plot line that has, like, less stakes.
Yeah.
And I don't. And
the stakes are all over the place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can someone explain to me if time is a place or a person or a planet or a dimension?
Or
yes.
Why? I still don't understand why it's separate from space.
Yeah.
Time wants space to be destroyed. What does that mean?
It's really, like... 7-year-old level logic.
I guess you need time for energy to matter, so if space destroys time, then a matter-antimatter collision will actually annihilate them. I don't know, I got nothing.
No, it makes no sense. And also it's bad.
I mean, I want to talk about the parts of it that were fun. Because I did say that right at the top, of like, if you don't think about any of this stuff, There are fun things happening, but I also can't stop thinking about all of this stuff.
Yeah, there are three doctors. There are three Jenny Whittakers in this, and one that's kind of sexy.
But she was definitely flirting with herself at some point.
Oh no, of course, yeah. Like the doctor says that she has a crush on herself.
I mean, she should.
Before that scene, there's that scene of one of them being tortured by the great big snake guy.
Bad guy.
Yeah,
yeah, serpent bad.
Kindle light.
I'm just picturing reading emails in a Flash cartoon from the early thousands.
Yeah, question. Do we think we're going to see this guy again?
I hope not. I don't care about him at all.
No, I kept waiting for a moment where they would explain what his deal was.
Right? But his deal is just that he has history with Bender and that's it. He's just a generic asshole.
How did he get to the Sontarans from...
I will say, like, his defeat is kind of thematically interesting, but also, like, kind of boring, because it's just him walking onto a rock.
While we're on the subject of what was their deal, what was up with the Cenobites? Like, did they just want humanity to suffer in a time loop?
I mean, it seemed like they just wanted to get back at the Doctor, because the Division had put them in a time loop. It sounded like that's what it was.
That, yeah, okay. It sounded like that's what that was, but we didn't, like, ever get, like, more than some expository dialogue here and there, right?
Right, no, we got nothing. Right.
Everything was very vague. They open the watch and the Doctor goes in it, and then they do nothing there. They do nothing there.
We get no information.
We get no information from the watch, which, at the end of the episode, she now has.
And she just hides?
She just throws it deep into the TARDIS.
Even though it's the thing that she's been trying to get this whole season?
Though it was said that it could possibly destroy her mind.
When has the Doctor ever not done something that could possibly destroy their mind?
Good point.
Suddenly this character has impulse control? I don't think so.
Right? No.
Again, talking about the one of her that's kind of sexy, I felt like there was a thing going on wherein, like, it could have been that the Doctor was separated into, like, different parts of their personality, but that was never explicit.
Does she have enough parts of her personality to be split like that?
I don't know. But, like, in the scene where she's being tortured, she is giving a different performance than I have seen her give as the Doctor. The naivete that is in a lot of her performance is kind of gone. There's, like, a sort of chill knowingness to her. She's, like, mean.
I'm kind of wondering, did she have a similar energy in the Witch Finders episode? That scene with her and Alan Cumming, where she's in a similar situation?
Huh. A little bit. But, like, this felt way more.
Maybe just tying her up pulls out, you know, the sexy side in her. The Doctor has a kink and we just discovered it.
So basically what we're understanding is that the Doctor is a switch.
I mean, we always knew the Doctor was a switch.
And they got switched into top and bottom.
Well, there's three of them. So it's top, bottom, switch. That's how she was split.
Again, anything to have made that or something like it more explicit, or just to have anything so that there's something there that's like a story or something. Something we can, like, hold on to as, like...
Right? Was this, like, 12 scripts that got cut down to 6 or something? Like,
and it's so weird that, like, there's so many things that are over-explained except for the stuff that matters. Like, they'll spend 3 hours discussing, like, basic-ass plot points, and then the stuff that you're, like, curious about, they say nothing about. And I don't even think it's, like, necessarily, like, he's trying to keep it vague and mysterious. It's that he doesn't care about those parts.
No, he doesn't.
So, here's another thing that I'm unclear on.
Yeah.
Did they fix anything?
I saw some people online suggesting that maybe because Sorm and Azur were kind of putting the universe in a time loop so it could be destroyed over and over again, that they had already started that, so they reset it. Maybe. But I don't know if that's actually what happened in the episode. Because it does seem like the episode ends and, like, all of the universe is dead except for the Earth. And the fact that we don't really take any time to confirm that either way shows how little Chris Chibnall cares about the rest of the universe.
And the thing is, it doesn't feel like he cares that much about Earth either, because I don't know how many times, like, we've seen, like, the Earth surrounded by the Lupari ship and stuff, and I'm like, I'd kind of like to know what the people on Earth think about what's going on right now. But we never see it. We never see, like, people on Earth reacting to this.
Where are my Cybermen Gallifreyans in all of this?
That is an important question.
Well, I think they all got blown up, right?
I guess.
By, like, a little tiny thing. I forget what it was called. Who can remember the Timeless Child? They were because of another old white man who self-sacrificed.
That's right. They got destroyed by the Universe Destroyer that got shrunk into just a Planet Destroyer.
Yes. That sounds right.
Sorry.
I forgot about the shrinking component of that.
And even that was unclear. Like, that's kind of us assuming that the shrinking component turned it into a Planet Destroyer. That wasn't clear from the text.
But I like a robust, rich text like this.
It had a real dumb name.
It was like the Dark Universe or something.
It was like the Death Particle or something. I think it might have
been. It was, in fact, the Death Particle.
The Death Particle, right.
I did notice something that felt like classic Who, or just Who in general, of having your Doctor Who villains or monsters in, like, famous, or, like, you know, recognizable locations, but, like, the streets are empty and it's just, like, Daleks or whatever. And I feel like it was much easier to do that this season because of the pandemic, probably.
Oh, yeah, good point.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Because there's that scene where it's just empty streets but nothing but Sontarans. I was like, I'm sure they were able to do that way easier than they've ever been able to in the past.
I do feel like there are, like, too many villains in this. Like when they would cut back to the snake guy, I'd be like, I forgot about this motherfucker, and I don't want to watch a scene with him.
It did have some, like, Spider-Man 3 vibes.
But yes. I do like how almost every single villain, not monsters, but the villains, got, like, sparkles and sequins and gold and glitter. That can continue.
The snake guy has so many snakes on his... He's got the big snake around his thing. He's got a snake lapel pin. And he has a snake staff. Do you think he's the Great Serpent?
But his jacket is like gold. It's like a gold sequin snake.
That's pretty rad.
That's pretty good.
The aesthetics of this season were good. I liked the aesthetics.
I like the look of Azure.
Yeah, same.
I don't know how well I like Swarm.
Swarm seems a little bit muddier than Azure, but I think they're both good.
Like, Azure is on point. Swarm, I can take as part of a set.
Yeah, exactly.
Pre-Swarm, like, before he regenerates, I don't like him at all.
No, that's bad.
That's a bad Swarm.
Important question for everyone. Did the Doctor fuck the dog?
Oh, yeah! Did the Doctor fuck the dog?
I think the Doctor fucked that dog.
Yes, Doctor fucked the dog.
The pause before she says companion.
Sorry, did you say pause? And yes, I do think the Doctor fucked the dog.
Oh, the Doctor fucked that dog.
Or at least Rill wanted to.
Christine, tell us about your tweet you made.
Oh, I had tweeted, someone on Twitter had said, what is your wildest flux theory? And my wildest flux theory was that the Doctor was going to die for real, but not before passing on her regenerations to the love of her life, Carvanista, who would then become the Doctor.
Doctor,
yes, obviously.
I'm dying.
I wouldn't have guessed that the thing that I got right was the love part.
Yeah.
I almost picked someone else.
I'm glad you didn't, because that makes the story so much funnier.
Exactly. I don't know what to think of this episode, but I also do know that it is the best Chris Chibnall finale by some margin.
I don't even remember the other two, so there you go.
Exactly.
What was the first one? Oh, the first one was the one that was like the ripoff of the Douglas Adams episode,
yeah,
right?
Exactly. That one's just boring.
Wait, what was the first one?
The Battle of Ronskor.
Oh, the one that was a ripoff of the Douglas Adams episode. Yeah. Yep.
The Battle of Hacker.
Yeah.
The Battle of the ripoff of the Douglas Adams episode.
Yeah, and none of those planets was even like a key to time or whatever.
No.
I'd say each one's gotten progressively better.
That's true.
It's like, the second one was better than the first one because it had the Gallifreyan Cybermen, so.
Yeah.
And Ruth.
And there was, like, plot to it. It was bad plot. But there was plot to it.
I have this theory that when the writing of Doctor Who gets weaker, the aesthetics get stronger.
They rise to meet them?
Yeah, well, just because they're like, we gotta do something. You get Timeless Child, but you also get Time Lord Cyberman.
You know what I think I find frustrating in this episode is that there's a lot of, like, look, it's all of your friends that you know and love. Your Jericho, your whoever. Look, they're all back in this episode. All of them are here. All of these people we've introduced. But, like, we don't get any fucking Ruth.
No Ruth.
Also, we never actually got around to meeting these characters because they're all played as mysteries.
Yeah.
And so it's like, oh, who is this guy? You see him for a minute, you see him for a minute, you see him for a minute, and it's like, okay, now we're going to tell you who he is, and then he, like...
I will say, the moment that worked the best in the whole episode for me was when the doctor shows up and, like, oh, Dan, and yes, and blah, 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 and then she's like, and this guy!
And the Victorian guy! Because that's who he's been this whole season.
Yeah. Here's my question that I'm not sure about. Is this a real person from history?
Yes. I'm pretty sure I looked it up, and I'm pretty sure he's a real dude.
You're pretty sure.
Did he build time travel tunnels under...
He built tunnels. The Williamson Tunnels? Yeah, the Williamson Tunnels are a series of extensive subterranean excavations of unknown purpose in the Edge Hill area of Liverpool, England. They are thought to have been created under the direction of tobacco merchant, landowner, and philanthropist Joseph Williamson between 1810 and 1840. The purpose of the work remains unclear and remains a subject of heavy speculation. Suggestions include commercial quarrying, a philanthropic desire to provide employment, and Williamson's own eccentric interests.
I think it might be Williamson's own eccentric interests. I think dude just likes tunnels.
Yeah, why not? Tunnels are cool.
It is so wild, though. I don't know what to say about this. It's so hard to talk about, and I know I've said that so many times because it's true. I will say that it does look amazing. Flux overall looked really good.
Well, with some exceptions. Like,
what are your exceptions?
The blue pixel shit.
Oh, the blue pixel shit did look bad.
So, like, the flux.
Well, no, I don't think that was the flux.
I think that was time.
Was time the dude at the end, the blue pixel shit?
You know, maybe.
He was purple.
No, but before. Because, like, before he's a guy, it's, like, sand.
Yeah, that's true.
I think that's the same shit.
Sure.
I'm very curious about what this season would have looked like if Endgame had never came out. So there's heavy influence.
Question. What was Flux about?
It was about a war between time and space time.
And space and time?
Yeah.
It was about how everything's fucked and nothing gets solved.
At some point, it maybe was about the doctor trying to find information about her past.
And how that's bad? Because the big emotional moment at the end of the episode is, like, the doctor apologizing to Yaz for not talking about it.
Oh no, Flux is the friends we made along the way.
No, I think you're right. But no... Because that was, I think, the crux of that scene with the doctor and Yaz, wherein they definitely almost kiss.
Right? What?
Right.
What is that scene if not them almost kissing? I can't find any other way to read it.
The film language of that scene is that they are about to kiss, and then Dan interrupts.
Which, like, why even invite him?
That's true. Dan has done nothing.
He's been,
I mean, Dan's
lightly
funny.
Pleasant.
He's an okay enough character. What I'm saying is, you've, like, been separated from your girlfriend, and you're finally back together, and you're apologizing. Why are you inviting this random dude in to interrupt you right before you kiss? They've done this.
I mean, to be fair, Dan has a history of barging into places he is not necessarily invited, so it may have just been a kindness.
Especially because, like, that girl that he liked didn't want to be with him, so he's like, he's got to do something now.
Yeah. I had really hoped they were just gonna, like, drop him off so he wouldn't be late.
They do have a time machine.
They do have a time machine.
But also, she, like, knows, right?
Yeah, she was in the dude, the passenger.
It was very unclear why she was saying no. Like, it could have been about trauma.
That's what I was assuming.
That's what it felt like.
Like, I got a very, like, I need, like, a fucking minute before we go out for coffee. Give me, like, a week. But, like, that's me.
Yeah, I think that's what it was, too.
That's what I thought it was, too, which made it weird that Dan decided to go with the doctor.
Well, Dan has zero emotional intelligence. This is, like, we have actually established this about Dan as a character. That is a thing about a character that is established.
But have we established that, though? Or have we established that Chris Chibnall has zero emotional intelligence?
I mean, it's just like Bart. It doesn't really matter.
That's a very inside joke about Death of the Author.
It's true.
That's for no one.
I feel like this season has had the most amount of speculation that none of it paid off.
Based on nothing. I'm on Tumblr, and I'll, like, see people, like, that are very into it, because I, like, follow one or two people who are, like, really super engaged with Flux. And it's wild to me, because I have no idea where they're getting any of this engagement from.
I've seen it. I follow someone on Tumblr who does the same, and I'm like, and it's mostly, like, just, like, GIF sets of, like, someone twisting their hand, and then they'll just, like, put, like, three paragraphs in the tags of, like, what this means and how it relates to every other episode.
Okay, this is why I said when we were watching this that the fan fiction's gonna be wild. Because canon is so vague, but it's, like, a property that people are invested in. They aren't just gonna go, well, that was kind of vague and unsatisfying. Instead, what people do is they go looking for things. And they will. They'll be like, well, you see that look, though? And that's what this means. And which is cool for me, because then I get to consume that.
Right.
Which is, like, a lot of times a lot more, like, thought through and developed.
Yeah, I feel like the people who this version of the show really appeals to are people who are using the show purely as base matter to make speculation and fanfic out of. And so, like, they can't have anything be too specific.
See, I didn't want to make any speculation because I felt like he wouldn't do anything, which he did. But I did wind up making speculation because there are these sort of pieces that are put there. And I did it because last season he made the fucking Morbius Doctors canon.
You wanted to know what he was going to do. So I was like,
what's he going to do next? And the answer is nothing.
Nothing.
We still got some specials.
That's true. I honestly would have liked, as stupid as it would have been and bad as it would have been, I would have been cool with Bell and Vinder being the Doctor's parents, because at least that would have been something crazy weird.
Well, it would have been something done with some intention, and I think that's, like, what we're trying to grasp here, is, yeah, like, what was the intent behind of any these, of it?
Why were there so many fuckers in this season?
Yeah, there were so many characters in it that did not need to be in it.
That don't even, like, really interact with each other.
No.
So why are they there?
Like, did these people need jobs?
It's the tunnels!
It's the tunnels!
This is yeah. the theme! We've Tony's got with something! Me.
And so that's why Williamson is in the story, because that's the clue.
This is okay. They're just building it. They're just building Doctor Who, not for any kind of purpose, but just to keep people employed. Is that...
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what this season is about.
And how it's really about the people and not about the Doctor.
Except it's not about the people, because they don't do anything or have any interiority or anything.
No, it's not about them having agency. It's about them just existing and continuing to exist.
It's about their people in it.
It's kind of like when you give charity to people and you're not doing it because, like, you're doing it because it makes you feel good and look good, but not because you, like, are caring about the people that you are giving to.
So yeah, like, no, that is Chris Chibnall's, like, bread and butter, is kind of gesturing towards the idea that he cares about people, like real people.
That line of, what does he say about systems? Bender's like, I love destroying systems, or something like that.
Right.
And it's like, that's a line that Chibnall wrote?
Almost feels like he put that line in there because of people talking about Kablam.
Right?
Right.
But he didn't have the Doctor say it. He had Vinder say it.
He doesn't know what he's doing.
He might not know what a system is.
No, he doesn't know what a system is.
It's a series of tubes underneath Liverpool.
That you build to keep people employed.
And for your own mysterious needs.
I think Chris Chibnall.
Don't you dare.
Your names are very similar.
Don't you dare.
Chris.
That was the politest threat I've ever heard.
I'm sorry. I think Chris Chibnall, like, knows everything about how to make an episode of television. Like, he knows all the basics, but doesn't know how to put it together or what it's for.
He doesn't.
He just has all the tools.
Hallie, explain the Demiurge.
Oh, God. So, in some religious traditions, specifically Gnostic religious traditions, although I believe there are others, there's the notion that the creator god is not necessarily the ultimate god, but rather is like trying to capture like the images and reflections they see in the water of true divinity, but is like fucking it up the whole time.
God, this feels right. Okay.
And that's the demiurge.
And that's the demiurge, yeah. And so like Gnosis is the process of like understanding that like, oh, there is true divinity above like this divinity that has... Anyway, check out Hypostasis of the Archons. It's a hip read.
So what you're saying is Chris Chibnall is seeing the reflection of RTD and Moffat and all of the classic Who showrunners and like, I can do this, and then just poorly doing it.
What I'm saying is he is adding his own level of codes on top of the codes that are already present in the text.
Semiotic thickness.
And adding not another layer of meaning, but rather maybe sanding off some meaning, but creating larger meaning in the context of like the community and fan fiction.
And putting a bunch of signifiers together in a salad.
Yeah.
Eat my salad.
Signifier salad.
Love me a signifier salad.
Really what you want is a stew. A signifier stew.
Signifier stew.
It's the cohesion that's important.
I feel like a stew is a signified salad. I feel like I have no idea what anything in a salad is anymore. It's not pointing at any meaning. It is only filling my belly and made out of things that used to have meaning.
It's got a simmer.
Simmerotics.
So how did we feel about Flux overall?
It was fine.
Over, yeah. I liked Village of the Angels, and then all of the potential of that.
I would love to see this same story done with a completely different structure.
Yes.
And see how that changes my opinion of it.
Are you going to do a Phantom edit?
I think it would make it worse.
Do you?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I think Christine's right, because I'm thinking of a Farscape episode that when they put it together and it was in chronological order, the way it was written, they're like, this episode's bad. So they're like, what can we do to make this episode at least mildly better? And then they just rearranged all of it, and it was like out of order, and they did weird edits and cuts to it to make it at least somewhat visually interesting and stuff. That's Scratch and Sniff is the name of the episode. And, like, I think that's what Chibnall did here, but on a whole season.
But the structure of it sometimes actively made me angry. Because, like, we would cut to scenes and I would be mad that we were in that scene.
But, like, when you're angry, you're not bored.
I guess that is a type of engagement.
Welcome to the 21st century, yeah. The most common and profitable kind of engagement.
I don't know how to feel about that. I feel very manipulated right now.
Right? Because you can't feel angry about it. Because that's just you falling into the trap.
I feel like this episode had the worst, like, was like the problems of the whole serial smooshed into one episode.
The whole season
smooshed into one episode. Like, it was like all the problems multiplied. I really hated the editing style in this one.
I feel, jump cuts? I was going to say, do you feel like they jumped the line a couple of times?
Probably. I don't know. The jump cuts... I was like, I feel like I'm watching like a YouTube essay.
There was that one scene specifically where they cut, Jody's delivering this like quirky line, and for every single sentence is a different shot.
And she's like looking in a different direction every time.
And it's
too.
Like, you didn't let her delivery do that. You don't got to do that through the edit. Let Jody do it.
Right.
But there were wipes.
There were wipes.
God, I forgot about the wipes.
So many wipes.
I think there were at least four different wipes.
There were more than four. There was definitely more than four. There was a point where it's like every scene change was a wipe. Every scene change.
I mean, that's very
Star Wars.
It felt intentionally very Star Wars.
And also very 11th Doctor. I think because like it's aping Star Wars in a way that a lot of 11th Doctor stuff apes Star Wars. Because like Flux did feel like Chris Chibnall trying to do Matt Smith era.
It did happen a lot when they were in like spacey places.
Exactly.
Like, yeah. I think there's something that happens when we get very concerned about twists and spoilers and wanting, and specifically, you know, this season of wanting it to feel like there are like reveals and everything's coming together. When that becomes important, people think like the trick to doing that is to just not give the audience information. and to like withhold all the information until just the right time. But if you're withholding all the information, like who these characters are, if that's part of the mystery, and then you have like these emotional beats and they don't land because it's like, I don't care because these weren't characters before. They were pieces of a puzzle. And now all of a sudden you want them to stop being pieces of a puzzle and start being people. But you've done none of the work to earn that.
And also the puzzle pieces don't actually fit together.
And tape them together, and what's happening here?
It's like doing a magic trick where you saw someone in half, but like do it behind a giant piece of wood and just say, hey, I'm sawing someone in half back here, and then you take them out afterwards and they're not sawed in half, and you'd be like, see, they're fine. Misdirection is important in the art of...
Yeah, but I feel like there's become like such a high priority placed on...
Twists
and spoilers and restricting information to the point where it's like information is the thing though.
I think I read someone say that like in the first season of Broadchurch, he had a backup killer in case the original killer leaked.
Right, yes.
And it's like, what kind of writing is that?
Are you building to something or aren't you?
The only time you can get away with that is if you're making Clue the movie.
And most people aren't making Clue the movie, sadly.
If you're seating two different people, and you can do, you can leave yourself, you know,
some wiggle room.
You can leave those threads and say, I might come pick up these up later, or I'll just leave them there.
I run enough tabletop role-playing games that, like, yeah, you have to be able to do that, and you definitely can be doing that. But yeah, like, but you're not, like, not laying tracks still.
And I feel like we've gotten to this place where, like, there's this weird emphasis on this in storytelling, and I don't understand who it's for, because it's not me.
I mean, I don't understand things that aren't for Tony either.
Reminds me of like the whole, you know, Marvel thing of just nobody getting scripts. I feel like it makes a worse product if like, it'd be helpful if you knew what you're doing.
Look at M. Night Shyamalan's career after The Sixth Sense. Like,
well, and it's like, I don't care about that. Like, a nice twist is nice. But I don't care about like, oh, this is the mystery. I have the answer. What I care about is how the characters that I care about are going to react to that information. What they're like, how it makes them feel and what they're going to do in response to it. Like, that's the meat. And if it's not, then I don't know what you're doing.
Homestuck broke the world.
Did Homestuck do this to us, Joe?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's part of the problem.
Why?
Just... this, like, puzzle box bullshit of just making, like, complicated things that it's, like, it's... the important thing is that it's complicated and hard and, like, there's layers and layers and layers and, like, not actually saying anything, really, you know?
Yeah. I do think there is a place in art for awe.
Yes. Absolutely.
And oftentimes, complexity can cause awe. But that has to be the thing that you're doing, and you have to be really, really good at it. Very few people are technically proficient enough to cause awe.
Aww.
It's very, very difficult. Actually, I just read a thing about Stephen Sondheim, where like someone said like he was one of those people.
For people listening to this in the distant future, Stephen Sondheim passed a very short while ago.
I mean, you know when we're listening to this. We just watched Flux Finale.
Right.
Oh, right.
December 5th, 2021.
Before the end of all things.
Why is there such a huge gap in between the first part of the Flux and the last part of the Flux?
I mean, that's the way TV scheduling happens.
Fair enough.
I'm wondering if there is a meta read of this, of like, about Doctor Who.
I don't think there is.
Wait, I wanna...
Well, like, all of the doorways are to each episode.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe the thing about tunnels is legitimately about Doctor Who.
But is it though?
I mean, we can bring a fun read to this show. We can
do it.
I just need to watch the episodes a couple more times. I will give you a rad fucking read on this. This is my specialty, is coming up with dope readings of things that I have like no idea. I do like dope analysis of boring ass text all the time for fun.
I want to hear more of this.
Chris Chibnall is the guy building the tunnels. The show's in flux, and he's going to fix it by building these tunnels to all these episodes.
And he's been building these tunnels for the duration of Doctor Who's existence, because he has been like just seeing the problems and building these tunnels. And like, this is him getting to go through these tunnels and connect all of the episodes that he thinks is important back to each other. And all the things in Doctor Who that he thinks are important back to each other. Like the Morbius Doctors.
Yeah, that's plausible. I buy that.
There you go.
So that's what Flux was about.
Chris Chibnall connecting some tunnels.
For better or worse, Flux is Chris Chibnall telling us what is important about Doctor Who to him.
And it's incomprehensible. I still don't know.
I don't understand how it's so incomprehensible, but so basic at the same time.
It really is. It's a really fascinating, like, character study and almost outsider art. The experience of watching Chris Chibnall Doctor Who, and especially Flux, is not that different from the experience that I got watching The Room, where, like, it is that same thing of, like, how is this all so basic and so bad, but also so weird and nonsensical?
I had a dream that Tommy Wiseau got a TikTok.
He probably does have a TikTok.
And got, like, very, very TikTok famous, but nobody, but the, like, TikTok people didn't know who he was. So he was, like, separate. He was, like, famous on TikTok for, like, a completely different reason. That's not important, I just...
You know how The Room sort of took off? There's a guy named Michael Russolay, who is in a sketch comedy group called 5 Second Films.
Oh!
Yeah. He's actually in the Disaster Artist movie in the
Joe
audience.
Never stops watching 5 Second Films.
Yeah, which is connected to The Magicians through Olivia Taylor Dudley.
Which is a better show than Flux.
I just built some tunnels there.
If that's anything that, yeah, the audience can take away from this episode of the podcast, it's go watch The Magicians. It's a little dodgy in the first season.
Yeah, first season's a little wobbly. This is the longest bonus episode we've recorded so far.
Sorry, that's probably my fault.
No, it's...
I mean, it's our fault together.
We did this Yay! Together. We built these tunnels ourselves.
We did. Understand that I'm gonna use tunnels under Liverpool as, like, a metaphor for people trying to make their own meaning out of a canon now.
It's part of Doctor Who, the unfolding text.
It is! That's the thing!
I've read 2 chapters. I don't know how much of it I've retained, but I've read 2 chapters.
Mine came, I've read the introduction.
We usually don't do plugs in the bonus episodes, but, like, we don't have guests, so... But do y'all have things y'all want to plug?
I have the same stuff that I always am. Read Road Trippy, Burn Notice, I guess.
Sure, why not?
We're in the middle of the second to last season of that. Go listen.
And then we're gonna start the Watchathon of Leverage.
I think it should be Leverage, comma, D. Like, Leverage.
Oh, actually, here.
Oh, Leverage, comma, okay, here's D the thing. Is good.
Leverage, comma, D is good. I will give you that. We've talked about this. We're not doing another podcast.
Sorry, I meant apostrophe D.
If we were going to do another podcast, we had a long discussion about what the podcast would, the show that we would do after Burn Notice. And the thing that we landed on was Dexter.
That would be D apostrophe Exter.
Exter.
Other candidates were House and Eureka.
Eureka.
Oh, Eureka's actually a good show.
I mean, it's a show.
It
fluctuates.
Its quality fluctuates wildly.
It's bad, and then it's really good, and then it's bad, and then it's really good. Honestly, we watched it in sync with Warehouse 13, and like
they had inverse quality.
When one was good, the other was bad, and it just like fluctuated.
Inverse correlation of quality.
To the point where like we looked up to see if they were swapping writers since they were both like sci-fi shows at the same time, and it's like, no.
No, just happened.
You want to plug your stuff?
I don't have stuff. I'm working on a thing with Tony that we'll talk about when we're ready to talk about it.
Every once in a while, Tony alludes to it.
I've teased it a couple times. I like to allude to it so that maybe at some point in the future, someone will be like, hey, where's that thing? And I'll be like, oh shit, I'm working on it.
Oh no, we've like set aside a day later this week to like sit down and iron some stuff out. So like,
now that we have you both here, can you give us some hints?
Pick a card, any card.
I like that. Pick a card, any card. That's all.
Yeah, that's good. I like that.
Hallie, do you want people to play your video game?
Jamestown?
I mean, you can. I made a game a long time ago. proud of the mechanics and a lot of how it works. I think the colonial politics could have aged better. We could have engaged more thoughtfully with indigeneity as a concept when we made it. But anyway, this is the worst way to plug a thing. Hi, I'm Hallie. I worked on a top-down scrolling shooter set in British colonial Mars in the 1600s called Jamestown.
And it's problematic.
It's vaguely problematic. It's not that, like, we do anything horrible. It's that we, like, don't address subjects that, like, I wish we had. But, like, also, there's only so much storytelling you can do in, like, a goddamn top-down shooter. Anyway.
My favorite thing about Jamestown is that you probably already own it.
That is the thing about it. Yeah, it was in some early Humble Bundles.
It's really, really fun to play.
I haven't played it yet. I need to.
But we do own it.
We do own it.
You should play it. It's really fun.
You should play it. Play it on PS4 or Switch. Those are the versions that are mechanically up to date and have the latest levels and stuff. I don't make any money off the game anymore anyway, so, you know, go nuts.
That's sad. You should make money off of it still.
Nah, it's fine. I am much happier not running a business. And I did for a long time. That I am still good friends with the other people who made it. I am happy with all of my life choices. Well, not all of my life choices, but like...
You're going to make it the sequel that addresses all the problematic stuff, right?
The scrolling shooter just a deep dive into colonialism. And
dog, have you looked at the video game industry recently? It's bad. It's a bad industry.
Okay, but what if instead of a top-down shooter, it was the opposite of that?
A bottom-up catcher?
Like a side-scrolling RPG, like RPG, like JRPG.
What, like Ease? Like, what do you...
Yeah, or just like early Final Fantasy even.
That's still top-down early Final Fantasy. Well, I guess it's not for the battles. Anyway, none of this is about Flux. If you want to listen to my fictional future podcast where Christine asks me if I would rather have done the one game I worked on differently and we talk about it every week, I guess tell people that you want to hear that.
I'm still trying to get Joe to genuinely start the List podcast. Sorry.
The List podcast? Yeah. Lists.
Let's also do a plug for Doctor Who Flux, but the game.
Yeah, I own that. It's pretty fun.
Oh, good call.
Shout out to Looney Labs.
Oh, yeah. People should play Inscription, too. That's a very good video game that I played recently. I didn't make it, nor do I know anyone who worked on it, but it was a really good video game.
Also, buy Pyramid Arcade.
Oh, yeah. That's a good one, too.
It's incredibly expensive. It's not expensive for what it is. It's expensive for me for a board game.
What's the Doctor Who game that just got released on Switch?
I don't know.
Because Matt brought it over, and I played a little bit of it.
The VR...
It was originally VR, and now it's on the Switch. And Edge of Reality or Edge of Time or some shit. The Weeping Angel level is fucking terrifying.
I hate it. We should do a bonus episode where I think we should buy it. I think we should buy it because we have the Oculus. I think we should buy it on Oculus, and I think we should do some bonus content of you playing through on the Oculus. Because I was listening to him play it on the Switch, and it was very entertaining. I want to see you play it with the headset.
It's terrifying. I hate it. You have to look at the angels, which I think it'd be actually easier on the Oculus because you can just look. But like on the Switch, you have to like fucking maneuver the kind of clunky knobs.
We have got to wrap up this.
Yes. So thanks for listening. We'll be back for another New Who review at the end of this month, probably. Because Doctor Who will be back for...
New Year's.
Yeah, New Year's. Eve of the Daleks will be the next episode of New Who.
Oh, because it's New Year's.
Yeah. Until next time, keep calling Rassel on.
Goodbye, and I love you in a platonic, parasocial way.
Bye.
Nice to meet y'all, Patreon patrons. Thanks for having me. Bye.
No, I'm all about disrupting the systems.
Prepare for the ultimate betrayal.
This is a betrayal!
Who wrote that flux for us?
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping for the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.